forces. Late last week, Iranian forces intercepted a detachment of 15 British sailors and Marines who were inspecting shipping in the waterway that lies between Iran and Iraq, the Shatt al-Arab. London insists they were in Iraqi waters. Tehran maintains they had violated Iranian territory. And according to reports, they now say that the British have confessed to violation of Iranian territory. And this may sound familiar. In June 2004, Iran seized 8 British sailors and Marines under very similar circumstances, among them now former Royal Marine Scott Fallon, who was released after 3 days, handcuffed, blindfolded, and subjected to a mock execution. Scott Fallon joins us now from his home in Dorset in England. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Neil.
Tell us a little bit about how you were arrested. Were you also inspecting shipping?
No, we were on a slightly different mission. We were moving from the south of the country up to Basra, along the Shatt al-Arab waterway, and we were intercepted by the Iranian gunboats, 4 or 5 different gunboats at that time.
And as I understand, your first impression was, "Hey, this is just a tactical misunderstanding. We think we're where we are. They think we're somewhere else. It's going to blow over quickly."
Yeah, sure. We thought, you know, this will be sorted out in 10, 15 minutes. It's just a misunderstanding. But as the situation escalated, we realized that it wasn't to be.
And what happened initially? They had a much bigger force?
Yes. They had much bigger weapons. Well, basically, it came down to firepower. They had more weapons, more men. You know, we were basically issued with their army-issued rifles, which is equivalent to the M16.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, there was 8 of us, and we were more than double outnumbered with anti-aircraft guns and heavy machine guns.
And your heart must have sank as you realized that you were being taken to Iran.
Yeah, well, these things slowly dawn upon you. After a standoff, we gave up weapons reluctantly. We realized we were in a no-win situation. Then the blindfolds went on, and that's when you realize the gravity of the situation.
And were you handcuffed at that point?
Yeah. We had the old plastic ties around our wrists.
And at which point you start feeling very, very helpless, and you start to get maybe a little scared.
Yeah. You don't know what's happening next. As I said before, we thought it was a misunderstanding. Things quickly escalated, and you find yourself in that situation.
Now, where were you taken after that?
We're not sure. Obviously, blindfolded from that point. We were taken from various locations during the 3 or 4 days. Again, blindfolded all the time when we were being moved around.
And were you interviewed or interrogated?
Yeah, interrogated, yeah, over the course of the time, of the 3 days. Basically asking us why we were in Iran. What our mission was. Obviously, we had no answers to these questions, as our mission was in Iraq, as we were.
And you told them that, and they, like, I guess, interrogators everywhere, continued to ask you the same questions over and over.
Questions over and over, yeah.
And were they tough on you?
It could have been worse. It could have been a lot worse. They weren't too bad. It's just insistence, you know, when we answer these questions, but we had no answers to the questions.
And there was no physical mistreatment?
Not really, no. No, it was a bit rough sometimes, but that's something you expect.
And you got plenty of food and water?
Not really. We were given a sort of plastic bin in this one of the cells with water in it, but you had to weigh up the options of catching some disease from this water or being dehydrated, so you had to find a sort of happy medium.
And after a while, I suspect you drank it anyway?
We drank just enough to get by, yeah. Yeah. Obviously, you don't want to start going down with something in that situation.
And was there food as well?
We had pita bread and sort of goat's cheese maybe once or twice per day. So you were hungry, although that was sort of the last thing on your mind.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand there was one especially scary moment.
Yeah. We were put through a mock execution where we were taken off a bus and walked in the sort of wasteland, walked into a ditch. And there was 4 or 5 Iranians with automatic weapons, AK-47s, on the top of the ditch, cocked the weapons, made ready, and we think to ourselves, well, this is it, time is up.
You can hear those weapons being cocked.
Yeah, you can hear them being made ready, yeah.
Yeah, it's unmistakable sound.
Yeah, it is. But it was for the cameras for some reason, and after what seemed like about 4 or 5 minutes, we were led out of the ditch, and back on the bus to a different location.
That's a moment that can change you a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's not one I'll forget, that's for sure.
Yeah. What do you think now? Tell us what happened in the end. When did you find out you were being released?
Well, we didn't even know that anyone actually knew about us. The first thing we knew was on the third night, we had a representative from the British Embassy. He came to the sort of holding area, and he explained to us that talks were being held, and they were trying to work on our release. It then turned out we were released next day in the morning.
Mm-hmm. And by that time, you'd been taken to Tehran?
No, this was before.
This is before.
Once we had met the diplomat, he told us we were being released. It was all going through. And on the morning of the fourth day, we were flown to Tehran.
And enormous relief I suspect there's a special bond that develops among soldiers who find themselves in that circumstance.
Yeah, well, we were a close team. I mean, the guys all knew each other before we went out to Iraq. We'd worked before previously, and we carried on. Once we left, once the tour was over, once we were released from Iran, we then carried out another 2 weeks in Iraq and then got flown home on Compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
But, the guys were all very friendly guys.
What do you think now when you see something very similar happen to an even larger group of Marines and sailors?
Well, obviously, the same things happened again. A larger group this time.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have thought that sort of lessons were learned last time. Obviously not. I think it's been proven already that these guys have been in the Iraqi side. They haven't been in the wrong. Yet they still face these charges of crossing the border.
When you hear reports that they have confessed, quote-unquote, to violating Iranian territory, that's got to be a little scary.
Yeah, I mean, without jeopardizing the guys in the situation just now, I'm sure they will say whatever they feel they have to say in the situation. Whether that carries any weight in the long term remains to be seen.
You guys get training in what to do if in the event that you're captured and interrogated.
Well, yeah, I mean, you try and establish a sort of personal bond with the captors, you may say.
Mm-hmm.
Make it more personal. Don't antagonize them. So you basically go along with what you think they want you to say. It's the end of the day. It's all about survival, and I'm sure the guys are doing all they can.
There are a couple of important differences between your experience and what's happening. Now, we mentioned it's a larger group, and for one thing, one of those taken last week is a woman.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. Yeah, it's quite concerning. We've had on the UK news her family today, you know, and expressing their anguish over what's happening. I can't really speculate on what conditions they're being kept in, if they were the same as ours, but it would be concerning for a woman.
The other big difference is that while Britain and Iran were not exactly friendly in 2004, relations are considerably more tense today, involving the Iran's nuclear program and things like that.
Yes, things are slightly different. Obviously, a new regime in Iran with the president,
mm-hmm.
And I'm sure. Well, personally, I think it may have something to do with the sanctions and the negotiations on this nuclear program.
I wonder, when you were captured and interrogated, did any of those issues come up? Did they talk to you about bigger diplomatic issues involving the nuclear program or anything like that?
No, nothing like that, no.
Just the tactical situation where you were?
Yeah, there was nothing about the bigger picture, the bigger political picture. It was basically, you know, what our mission was, why we were in Iran. As I said before, we had no answers to these questions.
Mm-hmm. The other questions I have for you, I mean, would you have any advice for the families of those 14 men and one woman who are now deeply worried about what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just stay positive. I'm sure everything that can be done is being done. I mean, the guys themselves won't have any idea of the implications of what's happening. As I said before, we didn't even know anyone knew about us until the third day.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I'm sure the government is doing everything they possibly can to secure the release.
And I guess the other lesson to learn is that while your experience was certainly not pleasant, though you thought you were in danger at one point, it turned out you were not. You were treated relatively well. You did get water and food and maybe not enough of either, and you didn't know where it came from. But nevertheless, you all survived it.
Yeah, that's the main thing, yeah. I'm sure the senior Marines and the senior military guys in this group will be speaking to the other members, saying to them, this is how we're going to do it. This is the way we're, you know, going for things. Get through this as painlessly as possible. And hopefully it should all turn out all right in the end.
And the other thing is you guys were all held together through this. You weren't separated and put in individual cells. I would think that would be even harder.
Yeah. Interrogation, you were on your own. But most of the time we were together, yeah. I don't know how this would bear up with the group today, with being 15 of them. They may be split up.
Mm-hmm.
But I would imagine if they are split up, they'll be still in three or four of a group.
When the first of you was interrogated, was he then returned to the group and were able to tell everybody else what was going on?
No. As each person was taken away from interrogation, the next person would then be taken, the second person. No one would come back until we had all been through, and then we sort of met up at a later holding stage.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we spoke about what happened. We'd all been through the same sort of situation.
Again, that's pretty scary when people are taken away for interrogation and don't come back.
They're taken away and they don't come back, and then someone else gets taken away. You start to have thoughts about that as well.
Yeah. 3 years ago, I suspect you remember every second of it.
Surprisingly, no. There is a lot of blanks, yeah, because basically the days rolled into the nights. You know, we're in stone cells with no windows as such, blindfolded a lot of the time. So the sort of your interpretation of time is a bit blurred.
Hmm. Well, we can hear children in the background. I assume those are yours?
She is,
yeah.
2-year-old daughter.
I'm sure she's glad you made it back. Otherwise, she wouldn't be there.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Scott Fallon, thanks very much for your time today, and thanks for sharing your experience.
Thanks, Neil.
Former Royal Marine Scott Fallon has been talking to us from his home in Dorset, England. Again, he was captured 3 years ago. A group of 15 British sailors and Marines was captured by Iranian forces just last week. The crisis is still continuing. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.